And we'll take that under advisement and move to the seventh case, Paul McGee versus the United States. Mr. Jones.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is an appeal from a 2255 pro se petition for ineffective assistance of counsel, where the defendant alleged that the counsel was ineffective for not doing two things. The first thing was not interviewing potential witnesses and then not calling those witnesses at trial. And under the true prong analysis of Strickland, we believe that counsel's failure fell below the objective reasonable standard, and second, that the defendant was prejudiced as a result. We concede that we have an uphill battle and that Strickland is a very weighty standard, and we're mindful also that the prejudice prong is a very close call. But the district court has certified this sole issue on appeal because in its opinion that there's reasonable jurists could disagree as to whether or not trial counsel was ineffective. This court has held that the failure to investigate witnesses can violate the Sixth Amendment. Trial counsel admits to not conducting an investigation into these three witnesses, and we believe that this is objectively unreasonable.
These three witnesses weren't eyewitnesses to the robberies that the convictions arose out of, were they? They were purportedly witnesses to a shooting of the main witness for the government.
That's correct. That goes more to the prejudice prong. I believe in the pro se petition they were listed as alibi witnesses, but we agree that they are not true alibi witnesses in the sense that they provided Mr. McGee with an alibi to the charges or to the crimes that were charged in the indictment. That is correct.
When was this information discovered that they said that he didn't shoot the other?
Well, according to the record, that was discovered early on, and it was communicated to trial counsel. And the whole issue on the pro se 2255 is that counsel did nothing with this information, that they had time to know this, but did nothing.
But he didn't get addresses or phone numbers for these individuals. He was told that by the defendant that the defendant's brother would track them down.
That's correct. There's an issue as to locations. I'll refer to that as not a tactical or a trial decision. That's a more of a practical decision based on geography or lack of information. We do know this, though, that after the proceedings, that a private investigator hired by the petitioner located these witnesses, took statements from them. So they're not totally inaccessible. I appreciate counsel's statement on the record during the evidentiary hearing that he was kind of left up in the air or was under the assumption somebody else was getting this information. But the people were able to be found. So our position is at least the performance prong of Strickland has been met. There was no investigation done by trial counsel to get these witnesses, who ultimately were found by a private investigator.
Yeah, but they were found after that date. Is there any evidence that they could be found as of that date?
There is not only that when someone else went to go look for them, they were found and
subsequent to the time that they were wanted.
Correct. Right. There's no evidence that trial counsel tried to go look for them either.
Right.
He was provided. To be fair, trial counsel testified at the evidentiary hearing that he thought perhaps somebody else was doing that job for him. I don't believe there's any evidence that he took any further steps. He testified that he did not have addresses for these witnesses. And
They were not provided to him. Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not sure about that. I would assume that would be true. If he didn't have them, they probably weren't provided.
Right.
There is some evidence in the record that perhaps one of the witnesses telephoned him or his office. In any event, he never got statements from them. They never hooked up prior to trial. After trial, a private investigator did find them. We think this, on the first prong of Strickland, that is objectively unreasonable, the lack of investigation. I think the Seventh Circuit cases, just on that first prong, have held that lack of investigation can be violative of the Sixth Amendment. The bigger problem, and I'll concede in our case, is the prejudice prong, and what do we do with this information later once we have it? And that's a little tougher issue.
Shooting victim, right? Freeman and the trial lawyer indicated that he felt he had tons or plenty of ammunition to impeach Freeman with.
Correct. That's correct. But in a sense, he didn't know what he had, because how can he know what he has if he doesn't know what the statements are going to be from these three disinterested witnesses? He testified at the evidentiary hearing that this case was one of credibility. So it's a credibility fight. And we know this by looking at the record, that the jury didn't totally buy into the government's theory. Mr. McGee was acquitted on at least one of the counts. So I take that to mean the jury was listening and that they were willing to assess witness credibility. And that's the unknown. Would this witness have made a difference? The question becomes, would they have further believed the main witness of the government's case, or would they have believed Mr. McGee even further? Because we know they at least, I think we can infer, they believed him on at least one count, that he was not involved with this bank robbery. So Mr. McGee's position is, Your Honor, that it is reasonably probable that these witnesses would have had an effect on the outcome of the trial, and he should have been allowed to present them to the jury.
Wasn't he impeached pretty thoroughly?
I think he was.
Was there any necessity? I mean, wasn't it so thorough that those witnesses wouldn't have even helped? His inconsistencies about the gun, the plea agreement, his prior drug use, his prior gang membership?
I think witnesses bring more to the table in a trial setting than just their statements.
But there were other witnesses to McGee's involvement in the robberies.
Were there some 22 witnesses?
That's a problem for the petitioner, to be sure.
Yeah, there were some 22 other witnesses.
The government had evidence at trial.
Yeah.
But we're focusing in on understandably this one issue. I think, Judge, they bring the three witnesses, and the government does make this argument of it. Well, it's cumulative. They've got what you said. They've got all this evidence. Witnesses bring more than their statements. You know, they bring demeanor.
If they can uphold their testimony, huh?
If they can. Yeah. If they testify like they told the investigator as well. But I think they bring more to the jury setting than just their statements that we read here on the record. I don't know. That's the reason we claim it's ineffective. We don't know whether the outcome would be changed. We think it would have been changed by allowing these three witnesses to testify. Obviously, the jury was capable of acquitting. They did it on at least one count. It wasn't a case where the jury went back and in 5 minutes had guilties on all the counts. So, unless you have any other questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you. Mr. Barrett, is anyone else in your office working today?
I'm afraid I might be the only one, Judge. May it please the Court, Jesse Barrett for the United States. I think the Court, in the questioning of Mr. Jones, has accurately pointed out some of the problems with Mr. Jones' argument. Most critically, this case is not Washington versus Smith. Mr. Jones tries to shoehorn this case into the Washington versus Smith framework, but it doesn't work. These three witnesses were not alibi witnesses. They were allegedly, they could provide information on an uncharged shooting which happened months before the crimes with which Mr. Freeman was actually charged. And unlike in Washington versus Smith, where it was a critical alibi witness who wasn't subpoenaed until the second day of trial, counsel knew where she was. Here, these three witnesses...
Are you stating that these three witnesses did not give evidence to the investigator concerning the offense that we're talking about?
They did not give evidence to the investigator concerning the offenses with which Mr. Freeman was charged. The most they could provide was some indication that Mr. McGee was not involved in the shooting that supposedly preceded
that preceded and nothing to do with this crime.
That's correct, Your Honor. And, you know...
Well, the shooting was supposed to have provided the motive for giving an incentive to somebody to do something about the bank robbery, wasn't it? I mean, it was linked psychologically to the bank.
Right. I mean, to be sure, Mr. Freeman did testify that the reason I did this is I was scared and intimidated by Paul McGee. But critically, defense counsel impeached Mr. Freeman up and down, and he had ample grounds with which to do it. Most importantly, perhaps, the very first time Mr. Freeman was interviewed after he was shot, I think in the right after he got out of the ambulance on the way to the hospital, he didn't even mention Mr. McGee. He mentioned some guy named Jeremiah. So he was impeached about that. Mr. Freeman, the very first time you were ever questioned about this case, you never said that Mr. McGee was even involved in the shooting.
So it was a shooting out of a car, wasn't it?
Supposedly what happened is the car pulled up in front of Mr. Freeman's apartment. Mr. Freeman saw the car, thought it was suspicious, started walking away. Three individuals, I think, get out of the car and start shooting him and then get back in the car and follow him. But regardless, he never even testified that Mr. McGee was the shooter. All he said was that, I couldn't tell who was shooting. Mr. McGee was with him. But he was impeached so thoroughly. He initially, in his first statement, said never said anything about Mr. McGee. He, as the court pointed out, misidentified a different gun that he was given by Mr. McGee than the co-defendant who also pled guilty, Mr. Spires. His testimony was contradicted by some of the other government witnesses. He was a past drug user. He was in jail for an unrelated crime. He had been a member of a gang. He testified. He was impeached regarding whether Mr. McGee ran from the car after one of the robberies, when in fact there was evidence that Mr. McGee had a rod in his hip. He was very thoroughly impeached, and yet the jury must have given some credit to his testimony based on the fact that they returned guilty verdicts. In that situation, where there's that kind of impeachment material available to defense counsel, not only is it objectively unreasonable to pursue yet more witnesses who could impeach Mr. Freeman on an uncharged act for which there is already ample impeachment material, but certainly there could not be prejudice sufficient to meet the Strickland prong, the second Strickland prong, where, again, he was so thoroughly impeached, and where there was ample other government evidence regarding the crimes for which Mr. McGee was ultimately convicted. This is not Washington versus Smith. This is not a failure to interview alibi witnesses. This is not a failure of counsel to prepare for trial and conduct interviews. It's something entirely different. And any attempt to fit it under the Washington versus Smith rubric just doesn't work, just given the ample impeachment evidence in the strong government case. So if there are no questions, I think that's all I have.
All right, thank you.
You're done with me for today, too, so thank you.
Good. You, Mr. Jones.
Unless you have any other questions, we'll rest on our briefs.
We have no questions, but you accepted appointment in this case, for which the court greatly